I'm going to talk this morning about the church, but first I have to clear a little debris out of the way before I can talk about the church. Seems fitting on this occasion since you're going to have your annual church meeting in just a little bit. So let's start here. Seems as good a place as any. We U.S. Americans live in an era of extreme individualism. That statement, at least to me, seems awfully hard to deny. Individualism is such a prominent feature of American culture that there are myths and saying about its very particular brand. One well-known myth basically says that you can do it all alone. If you try hard, and you work hard, and you focus on number one, you'll rise to the top like an island unto yourself. And yet here you are, joined together in a community of hope-filled and eager citizens of the world, at church. Right now, you could be lying on the grass at Forest Park sipping on a mimosa. Or you could just be at home sleeping in. Given the endless options of things to engage your individualism, why do you choose to come to church? Why do you do it? There are probably as many answers to that question as there are people in this room, and that's okay. But my guess is that deep down in your heart of hearts, each of you share a love and appreciation for life, a sense of awe and wonder, and a belief that the world can be made better when communities of people work together for freedom and justice. So together this morning, it is my deepest hope that in this space we have set aside to attend to those matters of the heart, that we may together rediscover the radical possibility of church and also of ourselves. Now, much of the conversation about the church in the 21st century revolves around declining participation. You probably see this in the news all the time. Experts can list dozens of reasons why church participation all over the world is in steep decline. I'll list just a few of them for you. First off, churches no longer occupy as large of a social utility as they once did. You see, in the modern era, the government and various social institutions have professionalized much of what the church used to offer. Things like vocational assistance, medical care, and education. There's also a growing trend in secularism and people that describe themselves as nuns. And I'm not talking about people that wear habits and live in cloisters. I'm talking about N-O-N-E-S, which are people that profess to have no belief in God or no observance of any religious order at all. There's also more than ever before a growing sense of distrust in the modern church for its transformation into what many people perceive as just another bureaucracy filled with hierarchies and rules and titles. And in the midst of all this, I believe that many churches are faced with an identity crisis. And as a result, those churches, their denominations, seminaries, and the faithful alike have been forced to redefine what the church is in real time. And that's really hard work. Especially when you're dealing with something that had such widespread prevalence for a long time. And added to these complexities, the church competes with cultural trends that rail against membership in organizations and institutions, while crafting an image of the individual as someone that occupies the very center of their own universe. This is the ultimate pull yourself up by your bootstraps mentality. Of course, self-centeredness, narcissism, navel-gazing, or whatever you choose to call it, isn't a modern invention. And within this denomination, Unitarianism, storied history, there exists a healthy brand of rugged individualism. I'm sure most of you have heard of Ralph Waldo Emerson and his essay, Self-Reliance, where he demands, and I quote, "Whoso would be a man must be a nonconformist." And that nothing is at last sacred but the integrity of your own mind. So his advice, absolve yourself to yourself, and you shall have the suffrage of the world. I end the quote there. Now, I'm going to speak very personally here. I don't have a problem with rugged individualism. I really don't. It's important to be self-aware, to hold yourself to high standards, and to take responsibility for your life. What I take issue with is the prevailing notion that everyone was born with the same opportunities and can simply bear down when the going gets tough, lace up those bootstraps really tight, and boldly march into a future filled with endless possibilities and privilege. That's a farce. It doesn't take a sociologist or an economist to prove that the boots some people were born with didn't come with straps, while other people never got any boots to begin with. And, moreover, absolving yourself to the addict of your own mind works for hermits and grumpy New Englanders, but it fails to appreciate the base fact that nobody comes into this world alone. It also fails to appreciate that many of us crave to be in community. Many of us crave companionship. Now, you may stop me there and you may say, hey, I can have companions in community. I can go join CrossFit, the Lions Club, or the YMCA and discover that there are fun and exciting people all over the place. And you're right. But the church is supposed to be more than a place where cool people gather every once in a while to get buff. It's also more than the cultivation of good governance and citizenship. But those are good things. I'm not discounting that. It's also more than learning how to live healthfully and socially responsible, as vital as those things are. At a fundamental level, the church asks that we understand ourselves as individuals in relationship with a living world, a world filled with enchantment, wonder, and transcendence. And that when people, just like you, gather together, we become more than just a collection of people. We become a community of people that together literally create life itself. Now, where does the word church come from? It comes from the Greek, as many things do. The word's ecclesia, if you want to add that. And what that word literally means is congregation or assembly. And the church, and it has come to be practiced in many Western cultures and rooted in those early house church movements that the Apostle Paul was writing to and all of those letters that we have collected in the New Testament. And readers of those letters quickly figure out that each of those churches were struggling to make sense of their true purpose. And each of them had their own unique brand of challenges and controversies. Now, I bet you're already aware of this, but churches have a tendency to resemble their contents. So like each and every one of us, churches face unique trials, disputes, and tragedies. In 1 Corinthians, Paul is addressing several disputed matters and responding to messages he's received that there is some serious disorder in need of intention. Now, I'd like to take just a few moments and dip into the life of that church in Corinth. Now, even though, get this book was written in 54 of the Common Era, it feels like this letter could have been written just about, I think probably yesterday, to just about any church. It doesn't matter. But you can tell me what you think in just a moment. I'm going to quote from the letter a little bit. So Paul begins the letter like this. Now I appeal to you, brothers and sisters, by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that all of you be in agreement and that there be no division among you, but that you be united in the same mind for the same purpose. For it has been reported to me by Chloe's people that there are quarrels among you, my brothers and sisters. End quote. I'm going to paraphrase that for you for just a minute. The last time I saw you, everything seemed to be all right, so tell me what the heck just happened. Chloe, by the way, is a seldom mentioned leader in the early Christian movement. She governed a large network of associates that, along with Paul, nurtured and maintained fledgling church communities. The scope of Chloe's influence reached from modern-day Greece all the way across to Turkey. And just think about this. We're still trying to cram women into prefab boxes, pay them substandard salaries, and question their strength and intelligence? This seems like nothing short of brainless discrimination, but I'm digressing here. So in the letter, Paul addresses charges of sexual immorality and basically says that healthy relationships can literally save someone's life. So sort your stuff out before something bad happens. And I think Paul seems to be onto something there. He then moves on to address the topic of consuming leftover food originally used for sacrifice. Now, for most of us, this is an alien consideration. But stay with me here. I promise you there's a point to be made. So on the topic, Paul says, and he becomes pretty philosophical here. I'm going to quote him. Hence, as to the eating of food offered to idols, know that no idol in the world really exists, and that there's no God but one. Indeed, there may be more gods in heaven or on earth, as in fact there are many gods and many lords. But just for us, there's only one God. That's a quote. I'm not joking. He then says to the community, and I'll paraphrase, if eating the food causes you an immense amount of distress and worry, then don't eat it. Become vegetarians. However, for Paul, the ultimate message regarding eating and relationships, those are two everyday, very basic things we do, and we seldom consider. The point is, and I quote, so whether you eat or drink, do whatever you do for the glory of God, end quote. Now, I understand that many of us in this room would choose to use different language. But Paul's point, put another way, says that every moment of our life, from the ways that we conduct ourselves with other people to the food that we put into our bodies, should be done with an appreciation for the fact that you are magnificently alive, that you have been addressed by a living world, and that every choice we make really matters. Paul then goes on to address the issue of social stratification in the church. Back then, wealthy members of the ancient church, they had this privileged access. So what happened was the poor and working class people would rush to the church after work to find that all the rich folks had already eaten most of the food, uncorked all the wine, moved all the tables and chairs out of the way, and started having their own little shindig. Paul had this to say about that. I quote, "If one member suffers, all suffer together with it. If one member is honored, all rejoice together with it." End quote. Now, as Paul addresses the issues Chloe's people told him about, I cannot help but think that we, us modern church folk, we just aren't that original. To this day, whether it be a small country church like the one I was born and raised in, or the Holy Roman Catholic Church, to this very day, people continue to overlook the contributions of women. People continue to consume resources without moderation and regard, and the poor and working class still struggle to find a seat at the table. The problems of yesterday are still the problems of today. So how are we to respond? Consider this. Paul understood that the issues families and communities face aren't just a result of the fact that you associate the word church with it. Church families and communities are, just like your own family, subject to an occasional dispute or issue. So before Paul signed off on the letter, he knew what he had to do. Paul writes near the letter's end, I quote, "If I speak the tongues of mortals and angels, but do not have love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give away all my possessions, and if I hand over my body so that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices instead in truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends." Now let's stop here for just a second. Do me a favor and just close your eyes for a moment. Bring something into your mind that you find beautiful, something worthy of striving for. Now think of that which is in your mind as a seed, something that must grow to be fully realized. Imagine that what you bear in your mind, if you manage to hold on to it long enough, blossoms into the quiet sanctuary of your heart, filling you with an inner beauty. Now consider for a moment that here in this room you are surrounded by the beauty and hope each and every one of us bear. It is in those moments when we stand face to face with something beautiful that we feel most alive. And when you challenge yourself to live in a community of people who struggle together to achieve noble causes of freedom and love, you engage not only the present moment, but you enter into a sustained conversation with history. You stand face to face with beauty that precedes you and a hope, God willing, that will precede you. You can come back to the sanctuary whenever you want. Now, very soon, this congregation will embark on a journey to find a new minister. And I refuse to stand up here and lie to you and tell you that it's going to be easy. It's not going to be easy. It's hard work to find a new minister. But the struggles you face aren't that original. There are people ready to help you along the way. And if I may be so bold as to offer you Paul-like advice, it would be this. Surrender the outcomes. Surrender a desire to always be in control. Surrender the tendency to control people's reactions, and instead strive to connect with each other. Dream together. Be inspired together, and give yourself over to this moment. But most of all, find joy in each other. Be patient and love each other. Remember always that friendship and love is often appreciated once it's gone. It's very human to think that we can do it alone and that we have all the answers. After all, rugged individualism has been ingrained on our minds for centuries. In the face of this individualism, the modern church is being forced to redefine itself right now as we speak. And strangely, the struggle seemed to stay the same. But maybe that's just human nature. But I promise you that though the risks are great, the possibilities are even greater. Beyond the rules and definitions, beyond the struggle, there exists that sense of wonder and transcendence that likely had led you here in the first place. That search for a community to share your gifts with, to share your love with, to share your dreams with, and to share most of all your life with. Don't forget to celebrate even those seemingly tiny, insignificant things. I would encourage you to be childlike in your praise. But most of all, let yourself be surprised by the beauty each of us shares. Together you are the church, and together you will come to redefine its radical possibility. Bear a beautiful thing in your mind and watch it grow. Amen.